Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Hour two of the Chuck Oliver Show on this Monday. Auburn gets after it Saturday. You got a slew of SEC teams on the 13th, and then the portal opens. And then just a couple of Mississippi State and a couple of others. We'll wrap up on the 20th, and then everybody's done. So for Arkansas, as a for instance, they are, I want to say, 7 or 8 practices in. I had a scrimmage the other day. And I was opening the show today saying, I just don't think that this is the kind of spring where suddenly you get a coach like Hal Mumme saying, yeah, this record-setting freshman from last year who's a returning starter, yeah, I'm going to play this other freshman now. Like, I was like, that's not really what it is. Arkansas does not have a returning starter, at least not a returning starter at Arkansas. I want to welcome on right now Duncan Newsmaker Line from the Morning Rush. He's the co-host out yonder at ESPN Arkansas. It's Ty Richardson. Friend, welcome back. How are you? All right. We will get Ty back on after that wonderful introduction. He's not there. That breaks my heart. We will get him back on. But they had, I think, 7 practices, and then they had a scrimmage on Saturday. And when I say they don't have a returning starter there, they've got a guy who's played football, played it at Boise State. They get a 5-star transfer in. And then, of course, the quarterback transfer carousel, it does spin, and it landed in Fayetteville and got them a quarterback as well. I want to welcome on now, as I said, Ty Richardson from the Morning Rush, co-host at ESPN Arkansas. Ty, how's your Monday?
Hey, Chuck, it's good. I apologize for the technical difficulty there, but getting ready for the spring game, which is next week. I'm actually going to be in Bozeman, Montana. Word of the wise, Chuck, you know not to do this. Don't ever book trips before the actual schedule comes out, which is exactly what I did. So I will be watching from afar in Bozeman, Montana, of all places, next week.
All right, I'm assuming there's going to be some sort of hospitality involved. Good for you on the getaway. That's what I'm going to choose to view this as. Let's talk about the quarterback situation, because there is a transfer who has played football. There also is Jacoby Criswell, who if you were still watching Arkansas in November, and I was, he got to play just a little bit in November, and he had some exciting moments. Talk about the quarterback competition, if it really is, or if Taven Green is going to be the starter.
Well, here's what's kind of odd, Chuck. Criswell, the guy you just mentioned, third team. A guy down in Georgia neck of the woods, Malachi Singleton, actually has been taking more of the second team stuff, which I think a lot of people were surprised at. I was, at least. So I think it's Taylen's job, unless he just blows up in the spring game and blows up in this next scrimmage. He's going to be the starting quarterback, and Sam Pittman kind of alluded to it. He said it's like, we promised the guys we name it after the spring, and they're just holding in the fact that Taylen Green is going to be the starter, and then they'll announce it publicly. But I think everyone probably knows that the 6'7 QB from Boise State is going to lead them out of the field August the 31st.
So there are names that we know at Arkansas at running back, and then there are other names on the depth chart that maybe you know if you're fans of other teams, but specifically with Dominic Johnson and with Rashad DeBinion, who got to play last year as well. Everybody got a little action last year. Talk about those two in the running back competition, and then anybody else who, if it's not one of those, who may be leading the thing.
Yeah, Isaiah Augustus is a kid from Naples, Florida, that kind of came out at the end of last year, too. We're excited about. Also, Jaquindon Jackson's the transfer from Utah that I think is going to end up being the starter. DeBinion, and you mentioned Dominic Johnson. Damo, as Coach Pittman calls him, is going to have a role. But I think last year with Rocket getting injured in that first game, and then there was kind of questions up in the air. A.J. Green and DeBinion kind of went back and forth. Green transfers out. Sanders transfers out. And you wonder if that position is solidified. Jimmy Smith goes to Fort Worth. They bring in, I guess, Colby Smith as the running backs coach, who Petrino's got ties with. So that's going to be a position to watch. I don't think it's they have a 1,000-yard back in that group. Pittman was asked about it the other day. They have some pieces you like. I just don't know. It's not going to be in the all-SEC room you thought it was last year, and it didn't even pan out to be that, unfortunately.
All right. What are the, at least midway through spring, what are the early returns for Bobby Petrino and the fit?
Man, the quarterbacks and wide receivers can't say enough good things about him. Luke has got a little banged up, tweaked an ankle a week or so ago, and that's a position that you expect to take a jump as the tight end room. But they keep speaking to his knowledge. And I think for him, your sole focus, I think you've talked about this with me, his sole focus is on offense. You don't have to worry about any of the extracurricular stuff, the head coach. And that could benefit him. And now being in the headset, like Lane Kiffin and Josh Heupel, two notable names that I think is really going to benefit Nico and then also Dart. Hopefully the same could be said about Taylen Green and Bobby Petrino. I know you don't always want Bobby in your head, Chuck, but I think more often than not, it's probably a good thing.
The environment around a spring scrimmage can be, I mean, on this, when they call it a game and they let all the fans in, how's it been as far as recruiting? Have they been using these for, to get like maybe junior day on campus or anything like that? How's it been on campus lately?
They just haven't had a lot of, like, there's just not a lot of excitement around this football team right now. But I think the basketball team not being successful didn't help. And then the baseball team's number one in the country, so it's kind of sucked out of the oxygen. I'll be curious to see how many people show up next Saturday, but there just hasn't been a lot of momentum in recruiting based on how it ended. They just lost two key pieces, number one recruit in Arkansas, Kerryus Kern. They also lost to Marion Parker, St. Louis running back last week. So there's been more negatives than positives, unfortunately, when it comes to recruiting for Arkansas football.
Very disappointed to hear that because, you know, this is time when, like, LSU, for instance, the neighbor to the south, is doing the biggest things that they've done in ages based around some of this stuff. Flip it around and talk about defense. I was going to ask you about the decommitment as well, but you hit it. Improvement on defense. There was improvement on defense, and they were a great unit last year, but improvement was enough. Where may they go in 2024?
They got issues at linebacker and D-line in terms of depth. We'll see what they add at the portal. Xavion Soares, the name that me, your audience would know, the Georgia kid, didn't play a lot in Athens, but he expected to start and contribute. Brad Spence, another young man that was a true freshman last year, had a couple fumble recoveries and pick six. I think that it's going to have to make plays. They're just young. And last year, I saw Travis Williams coach team that single-handedly in some games kept them in it. I mean, you think about the Alabama game, the LSU game. I know Daniels ripped them apart in the second half, but Ole Miss didn't have a lot of success offensively against Arkansas. And just go back and look at some of those games. I know it didn't go well against Auburn and Missouri, but there's several other good SEC teams that had trouble against Arkansas. And you hope they just play inspired like they did at points this year, because if they do that and they get any improvement offensively, this is probably not a 4-win team. You're maybe talking about a bowl game, maybe 6 wins.
Yep, and it just gets more difficult. And on those lines, where are, like, the Arkansas fans right now, where are they mindset-wise? And what I'm asking about, OU and Texas coming in, especially given the geography and the fact that certainly with Texas, there's a lot of history there with Arkansas if you go back far enough. Is that even, like, in the mindset right now for the fan base, or is so much attention on, we got plenty enough problems of our own to worry about without even thinking about OU and Texas?
That was a huge talking point, Chuck, and really Texas doesn't have to deal with it. I know they went to Tuscaloosa this year, but they don't have to play the SEC with Alabama in its heyday. This is going to be a good Alabama team, not a great one. So it's a talking point. They play Texas at home on November the 16th, following a bye. We'll see where they are at that point in the season. And then Oklahoma, you're hoping to have them on your schedule in 2025, but the SEC just did the away home and the home away this next year. So Oklahoma borders Arkansas, especially where I live. So it's always contentious when those two teams play each other, and we'll finally get to see it in football. But they do have enough problems of your own. I think you hit the nail on the head. Arkansas has so many issues right now that they're question marks slash they just don't know. And for the Razorbacks, if you're a head coach, your focus is on your own team, not Quinn Ewers and company coming in at the late November, middle to late November.
Wrapping up our Truist Reporter for Arkansas, it's Ty Richardson from the Morning Rush. Ty, appreciate your time, friend. Thank you for coming on.
Chuck, see you in about 3 months, man. Can't wait.
Absolutely, brother. See you there in Dallas. Again, Ty Richardson, ESPN Arkansas. He is the Morning co-host there and media days out there in Dallas. I guess he'll get to drive, and it will be a lot easier to drive than driving from Arkansas to Hoover or certainly to Atlanta or even Nashville. He gets to bounce over to Dallas. So good for everybody getting the bone throw from the SEC. They made it a road show, put it up for sale, and Dallas won this year. So that's what we're going to see everybody in middle of July. And Heath and I will be there. Dan Matthews, our old friend, will be coming up from Houston. So we'll be a little bit of a reunion there. All right, we will break and come back and continue with Hour 2 next.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the King of College Football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Rolling through Hour 2, Chuck Oliver Show on a Monday. Duncan Newsmaker line, it's full today. Heath's got a great Rolodex. Duncan Newsmaker line today. Richard Cross was already on from the Super Talk Mississippi Network. He and Brian Haydad deal it out every afternoon. Ty Richardson, the Morning Rush co-host. ESPN Arkansas, coming up in about 15, riding the bull sea. He's the publisher, the man. He's the pay boss at UGASports.com. It's a rivals thing, so we will talk about Georgia's game with UCLA is not going to happen, I think. Is that right? They're going to the Rose Bowl again? Well, they're not, I guess. We will talk about everything coming out of Athens as they continue to roll through their spring break as well. I was talking spring practice as well. I was talking about spring practice and the schedules and how Eli Drinkwitz, credit him, he must feel like smartest guy in the room, and it stunk because he wanted to get ahead of spring break. He wanted to get ahead of finals, wanted to get ahead of Final Four. Whatever may come up, he was like, we're ahead of it. So one session and done. Like, we started, we got done, had a game. See y'all. At Texas, they're going the other way. They're one of the few schools, South Carolina and Mississippi State, and a couple others. They're going to go April 20th. They're not even in the SEC yet. Their spring game will be on the Longhorn Network. It is one of just a couple in the entire conference, them and Bama, that you can see without having a plus. And the Longhorn Network is sort of a plus on its own if you're one of the 40 people who have it. But they're going to go April 20th. They're not in the SEC yet. They're already way ahead of SEC schedule. And what I'm talking about is one of the absolute last statuses you can attain, one of the final areas you can get to, like highest rung on the ladder, is going on the road in the conference is not a big deal. That's a big deal. Every time you go to Tuscaloosa, even for Texas, last year in a game they won by, I think, double digits. Was it 10 or 11? Even last year, going on the road in Tuscaloosa, that was a big deal. It was huge. And they were way better that night. And we're kind of confident. I mean, like, they weren't spooked going in. They weren't window shopping, walking out of the tunnel. Going to Baton Rouge will always be this huge thing you've got to do. All right, we play LSU this year. Where's the game? Like, that's, and there are a few short list places in the SEC where, regardless of, you know, almost any year and against almost any version of that program, it's going to be a big deal. There are a few places like that. But for almost every program, there is the opportunity to get good enough that you look around and go, going on the road in the conference. I mean, we got to handle our business. We got to be responsible. We got to, you know, not turn the ball over and play good special teams and be well prepared. We got to do all these things and be healthy. But we're not spooked by going on the road in the conference. Even on the road in this conference, we're not spooked because we're Georgia, Florida back in the day, Alabama, LSU, Tennessee for a minute, Auburn, whoever, Oklahoma and Texas. They've all had times when going on the road in the conference, not a big deal. Well, for Texas, it's supposed to be a big deal because Texas and OU, heritage as they are, they're new to this conference. And you weren't winning national titles, barely even conference championships for Texas. Welcome back. In a far lesser conference. So now you're coming to the big bad SEC. When I say Texas is way ahead of its SEC schedule, on the road in the conference this year, it ain't a thing to Texas. Now, one of their road games is at Oklahoma. That's the state fair. So that is a static setting. All right? It doesn't move. It's always there. Home, away, whatever you call it, we'll wear one color jersey or the white one, but it doesn't matter. We're going to be there. If you haven't seen Texas' schedule, and specifically what I'm talking about is the SEC campuses, the four road games in the conference that Texas has, because going on the road in the conference, it's supposed to be a big deal forever and ever and ever until you reach a super high level. I will tell you now that the three campuses that Texas visits, at Vanderbilt, at Arkansas, at Texas A&M. Could you lose? Certainly. You're going on the road in the conference. There's not a fourth campus you're visiting because it's supposed to be Oklahoma's home game, and they have it in Dallas just like you do. It's not just that the only three trips to an SEC campus you're going to make are Nashville, Fayetteville, College Station. It's even how it's laid out and when they come. Texas, like everybody else in the conference, 8 conference, 4 non. They start, and by the way, week 2, they're at Michigan. Good for them. They scheduled it. Texas is 4 non-conference games. They start the season 1, 2, 3, 4, right in a row. All 4 of their games right out of the gate. Colorado State at Michigan, UT San Antonio, Louisiana Monroe. Put your head on the pillow. Saturday night, September 21st, Texas has played 4 games. We're not even out of September yet. Their non-conference slate is done. So, obviously, if it's non-conference, they're not going on to an SEC campus. They open the SEC slate the next week. They're at home. It's Mississippi State. Bye week, OU. That's not bad. Home game against Georgia at Vanderbilt. Home game Florida at Arkansas. Home game Kentucky at Texas A&M. Even the way it's laid out. There is a lot of context. There are layers to this onion about how it can be and the fact that Texas is really, really good. Because if I gave you the same thing and just flipped it around and said it's the OU schedule, you would look at it at least a little differently. Even with Arkansas, you would go, yeah, OU, maybe they go on the road. Maybe that's dangerous. Whoo, OU at Texas A&M. That's one of the games that we're looking forward to. Texas and Texas A&M, they will succeed. Same thing with Oklahoma. Same thing with Georgia. Like, Texas is at a level where even the really, really good programs or an individual season where a team is supposed to be like, hey, they're lights out. They got all these people coming back, and look what they got in the portal. Texas is at a level where even Georgia, it doesn't matter when they play Georgia. It didn't matter Alabama. They lost at home, won in Tuscaloosa. Texas is at a level where it's about them and how they play and execute even against an elite bunch like Georgia. So I'm supposed to tell you that and flip it around because all the SEC did, big announcement. That it was pitched a big announcement, 25 SEC scheduled. And it got timed like 3 in the afternoon or whenever they were going to announce it a couple of weeks back. All right, we decided where you play in 24. Yeah, just same opponent, different location. You'll be there in 25. So if it's a, quote, easy road schedule this year, going to be hard in 25, is it? In Starkville. In Athens, that's no joke, but we just said Texas is at a level where if they win or lose against Georgia, it's about Texas and how they played. In Gainesville, in Lexington, any of that seem like it's going to spook the Longhorns? Like, they're just at a level where they're good, and then the fact that the road schedule lines up like this makes it even more likely that absolutely they could win the SEC in their inaugural season in the conference, which absolutely blows my mind. Heath, what's going on?
So, a public service announcement from those of us here at the Chuck Oliver Show. Today is April 1st. We say that because, of course, that means that there will be people who will try to spook you, whether it's your annoying buddy from the office sending you a text saying, oh, the quarterback's in the transfer portal, whoa, or whether it's this. From Florida Atlantic Football's Twitter account today, the Battle of the Coast, Chuck. Quote, where better to host this year's Battle of the Coast than off the east coast of the Atlantic? The game versus USF football will be played in the Atlantic Ocean aboard an aircraft carrier, a first in college football history. Friday, November 1st at 8 o'clock, floating in the Atlantic. And they've got the graphic of what it's going to look like to have the field between Florida Atlantic and USF on the aircraft carrier, as they have, of course, played basketball games
sure.
on aircraft carriers, which were in port, not in the Atlantic. Again, if you're paying attention, it should be really obvious what this is. However, you know as well as I do, there are some people who are not paying attention. And so there are people asking questions like, is it going to be safe if guys run out of bounds and things like that? It's like, folks, you got to pay attention here. You really got to pay attention. So seriously, don't get got today. And if you are the kind of person who for some reason thinks it would be hilarious to send a, oh, you know, Nico got hurt. Oh, no, to a Vol fan. Don't do that. It's really not funny.
Yeah, the retweet when you're serious about it is at least I can kind of forgive that one, because some people it just kind of sneaks up upon you unawares, and the retweet or the oh my gosh, the reaction. You're right. When it is the contrived, the planned for outcome, and it's already all over the place. You're right. I saw that same thing, and it was what Michigan State, North Carolina. It was next to the port, folks. The boat was not like floating out in the ocean. They weren't playing hoops out there in like the South Sea.
No, my wife actually covered that for WRL TV, and it was a spectacle. It was a really big event. You had the president yep. there. It was a big deal. And so because of that, I'm sure somebody somewhere probably has at some point, Chuck, tried to say, well, is there a way we could do a football game on there? And if you could,
sure, they have explored it.
That's exactly the kind of thing you would want to do, smaller schools looking for relevance. But again, that's clearly not what's going on here. And I haven't seen all of them, but I'm sure there's some equally quote unquote clever ideas out there. So seriously, folks, just be skeptical today.
Yeah. Not that it hasn't been looked at or anything else. I mean, we're playing, I think they play hockey at Wrigley Field. I think that's happened. They play football at Wrigley Field, even though there's one end zone that is kind of unusable, especially on fade route. But yeah, they're always looking for it. They ain't looking for this, folks. All right. So, yes, it's April 1st. Be on the lookout.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Now back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Kirby can hire. Chuck Oliver Show continuing on this Monday. It's April 1st, and we got Auburn on Saturday, and then a bunch of SEC teams. It's just a stack of them on the 13th, and then a few wrap up on the 20th. But Georgia's among those. They're 12 days away from G-Day, and Kirby can hire, man. He has proven that time and again, and the results show that they were just a field goal away in Atlanta against a great opponent from having the chance to go and get a third straight national championship. Well, that real narrow path that would exclude Georgia from the postseason, like the real postseason, folks, that path has been – it doesn't even exist anymore. And a 12-team playoff, Georgia's at the level where you just kind of look at them and you think playoffs every single year. Want to talk right now about the Bulldog program from UGASports.com. He's the publisher. It's his deal, man. Roddy Nabulsi. Roddy, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me on.
I appreciate your time. Let's talk spring right now, and there are new coaches there. I want to talk about your understanding what the feel is. Kirby, there's turnover on the staff. It's kind of a normal thing. I don't want to say disruption. Has it been seamless? Any DNA from the new guys that is noticeable, whether it's pace or volume or anything?
I think the toughest thing will be to replace Del McGee. Del McGee is kind of Kirby Smart's right-hand man. And Josh Crawford is, I guess, the ideal candidate because he's, I guess I call him Del McGee 2.0. You know, Del McGee was a coaching legend in the state of Georgia. And Josh Crawford's kind of the same thing. He's coached at five of the biggest schools in the state. You know, he's got D1 experience, at Tech. That's a tough spot to fill. But when you go from – think about the fact that you lose Will Muschamp, a two-time SEC East coach, and you're just the amount of knowledge that he has. And the guy that Kirby Smart's talking to is like, hey, are we going for it on this fourth down? What do you think? You know, what do we call here? He had, Will always at his beck and call to kind of help him out on those two title runs. But you get Travaris Robinson, T-Rob, who is a legend on the recruiting trail and is, again, he's Will Muschamp 2.0. He's just he was with Will at so many stops. That transition has been smooth. Of course, Dante Williams, Brian Brown, that's, pretty similar. And getting James Coley, if you're going to have to replace a fantastic guy in Brian McClendon, who's well-known offensive coordinator, wide receivers coach, with a guy who basically owns Miami, all Fort Lauderdale and all the recruits down there. You're going to replace him with James Coley, who knows how Kirby Smart likes to run. I mean, he was Kirby Smart's offensive coordinator. He knows how practices go. He knows where all the rooms are, So it was a very, very smooth transition. And the only hiccup I can think of is, you don't have the experience. You lose a lot of experience with Will Muschamp gone. And I don't know that Kirby leaned on anybody more than he did Del McGee, but Josh Crawford will definitely have the credentials to do it, but he just needs that experience. So a very good coaching staff that Kirby Smart has assembled in Athens.
That's funny you brought up Will Muschamp, because there were two guys I wanted to ask you. Best you understand, I was going to ask you Brandon Streeter, because he's still on the support staff, right, Brandon Streeter?
Correct. Yes, sir.
Brandon Streeter and Will Muschamp, what are they doing every day? Because we have this idea, they watch film, or they evaluate high school kids, or do they watch practice film? Are they evaluating high school kids? What are they doing every day?
Well, that's part of it. Now, Will's, got a lot of stuff going on with his family, with his son. His boy's off to Vanderbilt, so he's been really, really busy. But yeah, Streeter, those are the guys who break down the film. They break down special team stuff. They look at films. Hey, Kirby, here's three guys we need to talk to. You are a jack of all trades. It's not a fun job, but there are so many things that you have to have done, from recruiting to film practice to being out there watching practice. They can't technically coach while they're out there, but they can go after practice, go, hey, man, let me tell you what I saw, Kirby. This guy, the third guy in that rotation, he's loafing. Or this guy, we need to move him from second string to first string. That's just my thought. So the amount of experience between those two guys, it's just, you've got coordinators and head coaches who are, that Kirby can lean on. And I give Kirby Smart a lot of credit. If you read my tweets, it's Kirby Smart this, Kirby Smart that. But I kind of use him as the inclusive for the Georgia program. Now, it is his decision to have those guys there, but he's the first to tell you it is a team effort. And you kind of roll your eyes and go, oh, great, that's coach speak. But when you look at the fact that, there's been times he's had three or four ex-head coaches on the staff, or five or six offensive or defensive coordinators on the staff, there's just a brain trust at some point that just pays dividends.
Let's talk about Colby Young, because everybody wants to talk about the possibilities for a returning guy, or London Humphreys has a lot of attention. Then all of a sudden practice starts and Colby Young, the transfer receiver from Miami, is the guy that people are going, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, him too. Any word about Colby Young and what his future in Athens looks like?
Well, if you go to practice and you ask people who go, because Kirby only lets us in for a few minutes, and it's usually only twice in spring. The first guy you see when the wide receivers are running their routes is Colby Young. He's a giant, 6'5", 200-something pounds. Him or Tyler Williams, who's like 6'3½" or 6'4". Wow, look at that. Because Georgia, historically, the last few years, how many 6'2", 6'3", 6'5", guys have they had? They get it done with Ladd McConkeys and, George Pickenses and, Dominic Lovitz. There's not big names out there. They don't have a bunch of Marvin Harrisons. But you see Colby Young, you're like, oh, my God, look at that guy. And he's been turning some heads. But here's the thing. This past scrimmage, the one they had on Saturday, they tried Colby as a returner. He did okay, but it's Anthony Evans, the guy that came on at the end of last year that's so lightning fast. He's clearly the front runner to be a returner. And it was Dylan Bell, you know, the Mr. All-Everything, who was making big catches down the field. And one of the fastest guys in college football, you know, you go to Arian Smith, the 10-1 guy, the 10-flat guy in the 100 meters. He's actually gotten very physical this spring. He's putting his face mask into people's sternums and just driving them. And he caught a long pass in the scrimmage as well. So this might be the – with James Coley back, you know, this is a new lease on life for Arian Smith. Again, elite, elite speed. Maybe the fastest wide receiver ever in the history of University of Georgia. And that guy is out there catching passes. So if you have Dylan Bell, Arian Smith, Dom Lovett, and then big Colby Young on one side, that is – Carson Beck's just going to eat.
Let's flip it around to defense and go way back. K.J. Bolden, because even a great player, Caleb Downs, goes to Alabama last year, and even early in the season, because it's elite competition, he's like, oh, bad moment against Texas, touchdown. It happens. You're the SEC. Talk K.J. Bolden and early impressions, because he's got the college-looking body, and he comes from a great high school program. How ready does he look?
He looked ready ever since last year. We were at every Buford game taking video of Dylan Raiola because he was committed to Georgia. He's the number one quarterback in the nation, number one player in the nation. He's coming to Georgia. He's 50 minutes away. So I had a videographer at every game taking video of Dylan Raiola so we could do a weekly update. And that videographer every week, his name's Mark, would hit me up and go, Georgia's got to get K.J. Bolden. They've got to get him. Here's a video of him making a big hit. Here's a video of him taking the ball to the house. Here's a video of him running it. He's like, I know you got me filming Dylan Raiola, but I want K.J. Bolden more than I want Dylan Raiola. I'm like, wow. Okay, so, yeah, he's that guy. He's ready. And don't forget, I mean, he's the number one safety in America. So you lose out on Caleb. That's tough, you know. But if you get K.J. Bolden, I mean, he's Malachi Starks. I mean, Malachi came in and started his first year. You remember that Oregon game where he has that crazy interception, and he was on the landscape. K.J. Bolden can be that guy. But the other name everyone needs to know is Ellis Robinson, number one cornerback in the nation. And every time we go to practice or every time we hear about practice, Ellis Robinson is one of the first names we hear. And that's with a loaded bunch of guys in the secondary. You got Julian Humphreys, Dalen Everett. You know, it's for a freshman to come in and start making that kind of waves, get ready for Ellis Robinson, the fourth, third.
Yeah.
He's pretty impressive.
Last thing I want, and I'm trying to remember the kid's name. He is a high school running back that got running around at safety now. Is it a kid out of North Carolina? Help me.
I'm not sure who you're talking about.
Oh, my goodness. Is Aguero going to be the guy?
Oh, Janiel Aguero. Yeah, not at safety. He's a star. Now, he does do a little bit of safety as well. But Aguero, and I tried to get one of the guys last year. I was asking about who hits hardest in the secondary. And it was Ja'Cory Thomas, and Ja'Cory Thomas is kind of a headhunter too. And he's like, oh, well, we all hit hard. And I'm like, now that Javon Bullard's gone, who's the big hitter? Who's the one everybody looks to? Who's the guy everybody's watching? He's like, oh, and he was very politic, I should say, and wouldn't name a name. 5 minutes later, and asking another question, he's like, yeah, Janelle Aguero, take your head off. I'm like, that's all I wanted you to say. I just needed it on the record. So, yeah, he is an absolute monster at star. And you know how important that is. I mean, you saw how Javon Bullard changed the game when he was there in Georgia's first championship. And then the next one, you know, last year when he's at safety, how the game changes. And Tyke Smith, how important he is there. It is a vital part of Georgia's defense. The star is incredibly needed. And Janelle Aguero, that's the kid. Keep an eye on him.
Yeah, I was looking at draft stuff, and it's a surprise. I watched maybe every Georgia snap last year, except for one of the September games, and it surprised me. Tyke Smith led the team in tackles. I'm like, you just don't, stumble into that. The kid I was asking about, Kyron Jones, he is a three-star running back out of North Carolina, and they got him running around blowing people up on defense. Is that right?
I've definitely heard that. I just haven't heard his name as much as the other guys.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That was the kid. I wanted to clear that up because I throw something out there, and I know it's further down the depth chart, but I'm always interested in position changes because spring is that time when they're willing to go, you know what, let's just try you at corner. Let's just try you at running back. Like, that's just a normal thing. You don't have to always read stuff into it, right?
Right, you don't. And they do a lot of cross-training. I mean, we had Ja'Cory Thomas, and our story on him was – everybody was wrong about Ja'Cory Thomas, you know, because when he came in, he hadn't played a whole lot of safety. Yeah. He hadn't been back there before, and it took him a while to get to it. And now he's, you know, definitely, you know, potentially one of your starters. If Kirby Smart let us talk to him, that means the kid's probably going to start at some point. So when he came out there and we had to write a story, yes, he's been here 3 years, and he came in with all these other big names. And a lot of people just kind of said, oh, well, he's a bust, you know, because he's not playing. He's not starting over some of the other five-star guys. So I'm like, hey, sometimes when you switch a guy position or switch a position with somebody, it might take them a year or two before they're, you know, Kirby Smart certified to play that as a starter. So Ja'Cory might be one of your guys.
All right. Rod, it's always great stuff, friend. Thank you for making time today. I appreciate you, brother.
Thanks for having me.
UGASports.com. He's the publisher there, Rivals. So this is when you try it in spring. You're going to flip somebody around. You're going to give them a little bit of run over there, and you're going to see if it sticks. And Jones is, you say, a three-star running back. Had to get a scholarship to Georgia. I got scholarship to Georgia because what I'd said about Brian Kelly, who he says, I always say, one scholarship for me. It's a thought that Kirby will use a scholarship. I got one at the very end. And it will just be the, I'll say, quote, best-looking athlete out there. And if you're talking about a running back who's like a 1,500-yard guy in a state like North Carolina, and he's like 6'1", 230, and like really good speed, you're looking around thinking, is there something we can do with this? If we can get this guy on campus, if we can get him, you know, whatever, change his body, we can get him, you know, faster, or we can get him bulkier or whatever it is. You get a kid 200 pounds or bigger, 6 feet or taller, and he's got good speed and is used to contact, and we're Georgia and we already have a bunch of running backs. Yeah, you look around and go, all right, we're going to try somebody. And so try him on defense. And in addition to all the kids who are actually 4-star and 5-star, defensive recruits. So there's that. All right. We will take a quick break, come back, wrap it up next.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
The next 2 weeks are going to be critical. You know, and I think that's the big takeaway with the players today walking off the field was we're halfway. And it's important that we have a great focus over the next 2 weeks. So critical 2 weeks to come. We've got to get really specific about the areas where we need to improve.
Billy Napier, and he's one of those coaches with a spring game coming up a week from Saturday. And they're halfway through, had a scrimmage on this past Saturday. Of course, everybody wanted to know about DJ Lagway, and he talked about that. And again, there are supposed to be, and there are expected meandering opinions about any sort of five-star quarterback recruit who then arrives in college, because it almost always becomes way, 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 way more difficult. Even Johnny Manziel, he won the Heisman as a freshman, as a redshirt freshman. So at least, and he almost didn't beat, I was a kid, Jamel Showers. Who in August, you're like, yeah, we're not really sure who's going to start. And it was Johnny Manziel, and he wins the Heisman that year. So it's just, it's an impossible thing. And Tim Tebow, he was part of a national championship, but he was kind of the niche guy. He would run into people, and he would throw a pass to, I may be a decade off. Was it Tate Casey? Whoever it was. He had a role, and then he became the starter and scored 50 touchdowns, won a Heisman. So all of that happened. But when you first show up, man, DJ Lagway, especially in a not great, when Tim Tebow, for instance, this is now 19 years ago, maybe, or 20, he shows up in Gainesville, and it was a team that never should have been in the position where Jarius Norwood fires Ron Zook. Like, Florida should be way beyond something like that happening, but it happened. And they're like, hey, Ron, you want to coach the rest of the season? He's like, yeah, cool. So that was just this weirdness. And then Urban Meyer shows up and they become a professional franchise. It was a really good setup. And then Tim Tebow arrived. So that's not the same Florida for DJ Lagway. And Napier has said that he has impressed, that Lagway has impressed the head coach with his ability, quote, ability to learn and retain information. When you come from, who was it? Felipe Franks was from, I think, Crawfordville, Florida. And he might have, the word was he'd never had a coach specifically for quarterbacks. Like, he had offensive assistants, but, like, he graduated from a really small high school, and it hadn't been this great level of competition, so there's just a level of instruction you'd never had, and you start to wonder about, okay, when we throw you into the 15-foot water, like an SEC offense, what's it going to be like? DJ Lagway, apparently the early returns on that, that it's good stuff, and there's going to be a role, and I'm sure that he's also not trying to blast the kid in the media by going, yeah, he has no idea, but he's a very talented kid, and he's there, and he's trying to learn and be part of the answer. Heath, what's up, man?
So a couple more things, just kind of tying in with the basketball stuff, just because I do think there's a lot about what's going on in basketball that tells us what's about to happen maybe in football on the 15th. Out of the eight teams that played in the Elite Eight, Chuck, you want to take a stab at this one? How many of the eight teams' starters actually all began their career at the program they were playing for?
40 players across eight teams in the starting lineup, and I'm going to say 40 of them. I'm going to say 12.
A little more than that, but only one school. Duke was the only program of the eight that had all of their original starters, or all their starters begin their career there at Duke. Tennessee had four, and also Purdue had four. But the team that a lot of people think is going to win the national championship, UConn, they have three starters that are not former UConn players from arrival, including a kid from East Carolina that's tearing it up for them. You have multiple programs here that have members of the Southern Illinois Salukis. You've got LaSalle on Clemson's program. You've got Alabama in the Final Four with a kid from St. Peter's, a kid from North Dakota State, a kid from Wofford, and a kid from Ohio. Not Ohio State, Ohio, in the starting lineup. Chuck, this is where I think we're going. You've seen so much of this recently with regards to the transfers. You have all these kids that now are not getting recruited out of high school because so many schools are recruiting transfer players, saying, well, we know we don't need to bring the kid in that's a three-star and develop him for 3 years unless we just love him. We'll let him go somewhere else, play for a couple of years, and then we're going to bring him in. What you're seeing there, when teams are in the Elite Eight like at Alabama, only one of their five starters is an original Bama kid. And Nate Oates has recruited pretty well at Bama, by the way. And yet still, only one of the five is an original Alabama kid. This is where we're going for football, too. Not quite that percentage, I suspect. I don't know that you're ever going to see a contender with 80% of their starting lineup having come from transfers. But all these kids that normally would have been getting recruited that are instead getting passed over for transfers, they're going to go play at Group of Five schools or maybe even FCS schools, and some are going to turn out to be really good. And whoever is the best at finding those kids and saying, hey, we missed on this kid originally, or we didn't miss on this kid, but this kid needed the game experience and needed the extra 25 pounds of weight that you get from a college training table and a nutrition program and a work and strength program compared to high school – this, whoever figures this formula out for being the best schools at it in college football in the next 5 years, that's going to be who's winning.
You got to have the bankroll to follow through on it. You know, we talked last year about the Miami Hurricanes basketball program. What do? They went name, image, likeness shopping. And while we were all paying attention to De'Aaron King and everything else with the football program, they went out and got two NBA players in the portal, and they went to a Final Four. So, like, basketball, and you tell me this, Heath. Yeah, I mean, you've watched the sport all your life. Isn't that the sport where you can show up and get a run going? Like, you don't have to have history necessarily. It's great, for especially in college, if you've got history with that coach and his system. But you can show up with some studs and just start, like, whipping everybody, can't you?
You can, and not only that, Chuck, but that's also where experienced guys, guys that have that age, can make a giant difference. You look what Lamont Paris did at South Carolina this year. He took them and made them one of the oldest teams in the SEC and shocked everybody. That's going to be another formula. Experience over athleticism is going to be a different way to win.
Yeah, football, just because of the 85 and so much of it is intertwined, but I can get a point, a post, and a bomber. I'm ready for the Final Four. All right, wraps it up on a Monday. David on the ones and twos. He, me, we'll all be back in 22 hours.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.